When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yo, welcome into the House of L podcast. I am Lawrence Holmes. Thank you so much for hanging out and listening to the pod. I don't know if I should call this a warning. A warning seems weird, especially considering the subject matter of this. But I will offer that if you are someone who is a little bit more secular and maybe not as comfortable with conversations about religion, and you're like, you know what, Lawrence, I'll catch you on the next episode, I'm okay with that. Like, that's totally well within your right, but I want to tell you that there will be some conversation about God. I imagine I'll even quote scripture at some point. And if that's not your thing, I understand that. I don't think that people, even though I know a lot of people who have used religion to become moral, one does not need religion to be moral, in my opinion. I know plenty of moral people, good people, who are agnostic and atheists. And I don't want you to feel like this is a condemnation of your journey to morality, being the best person that you can be, being good in your community, all of that stuff. So, but I wanted to tell you that before we get started here. And there's a lot of layers to this, and I'm going to try and work through a bunch of different feelings and conversations that I've had over the last few days as it pertains to what I had to say about Pastor Dates and his opening address at Soldier Field during the Bears' presentation of their proposal for a stadium, which, again, we'll get into that too inside of this episode. So if you can make it through some of the conversation about religion, then that's one of the things that will be on the other side. I want to start this by offering a sincere apology to the members of Salem Baptist Church. I owe them an apology. And I want to say that as full-throated as my rebuke of the pastor's actions at the proposal. They caught strays while I was talking about this, and they didn't deserve that. And so I apologize to them. While trying to protect the flock, I didn't do a good job of shepherding. I blame them for something that was not within their control, and I apologize. I've talked to a bunch of different people inside that congregation, some of them with forgiveness in their heart and understood where I was coming from, even if I didn't necessarily express myself well. Some of them not. And I will say that to those people, I would say that you're not doing your job as a Christian. And I stand by that. That if your first impulse was to come after me on some hate type stuff or some threatening type stuff, which happened, or to try to lessen me and whatever my contributions have been to the city of Chicago, to organize religion, to the South Side in particular, then whatever. But there have been a lot of people from that congregation who have reached out and been like, hey, I understood where you're coming from. Did you really have to throw us under the bus too? And I didn't. And that was not my intent. And to them, I apologize. I'm very sorry about that. I am not going to apologize for my feelings about Pastor Dates being a part of the shenanigans that were going on the lakefront. And when I said that my feelings of this are based in scripture, I wasn't kidding. And I'll get to that. I don't know how much you want to know about me if you listen to this podcast. My hope is that you want to learn as much as I'm willing to share. There's some stuff that I'm willing to share. There's some stuff that I'm not. For the most part, when it comes to my relationship with God, it's a work in progress. But it has a pretty strong foundation in the church, which was another thing that annoyed me in talking to people about this, because there was this belief that because when I'm on the air, you don't quite know where I stand when it comes to my relationship with God. Parenthetically, I'm still working on that too. That you assume that I'm a heathen and maybe not taught in the ways of the word or the Bible. And I will tell you that that is not true. Why don't we start with my name? My full name is Lawrence Wendell Matthew Holmes. Okay? I am named after two saints, and one of those saints I chose to name myself after. I was brought up in the church. I served as an altar boy and made it all the way up to the highest point that one can make it before one chooses to go to seminary. I spent a great deal of time between ages 5 and 14 reading the Bible publicly. Part of the reason that I work in broadcasting now is because of being in front of microphones in churches when I was a kid. I'm not saying any of this to brag. I'm trying to let you understand that the conversation that I'm having with you is coming from a place of someone with a background in God. My name, Lawrence, is St. Lawrence the Martyr. And you can go look him up too. That a big portion of his life was spent trying to work with and for the poor. I went to a Catholic university, St. Vincent de Paul. And you don't walk out of Catholic universities without religion classes. The beautiful thing about going to DePaul is even though my classes were taught by Catholic priests, they were big into making sure that you looked around to find your own pathway to God. I remember having a very long conversation with Father James Halstead when I was a freshman and trying to figure a lot of things out, because clearly the Catholic Church has had issues of abuse that stem back hundreds of years. And we would talk about how can one be in the faith when you see so many people corrupting faith? And his answers to me and where he led me into different books of worship, different denominations of Christianity, and him saying, look outside of Christianity too. Look to Buddhism. Look to Judaism. Look to Islam. Look at all of these things and figure stuff out. And when you start to read a lot of the holy books, you realize that there's most of the rules that are in place are pretty similar. the idea, like the golden rule, you're going to find that in a lot of different places, you know, or something similar to the golden rule. You're going to find in a lot of different places. So it bothers me that I was perceived by some, not all. Like I said, there are a bunch of people who reached out with forgiveness in their heart and were trying to understand where I was coming from. And to them, I say, thank you, because that's how I feel like good conversations go. But there were the ones that were acting like, and this is one of the things that has driven me away from churches, is the idea that only your church or only your sect of Christianity creates pious people or good people, and it's not true. So that bugged me a lot. So I spent a lot of time talking with people that I trust about this. I have friends who work. It's funny because I sought the counsel of a friend of mine about this, who would be considered an evangelical conservative Christian pastor. And we had a nice conversation about this. And this person knows where I'm coming from, knows what I do for a living. And I shared what I said and what the pastor said with this pastor. And we talked it out, and I thought it was great. It gave me some really great perspective on this. Because when people push back at you, I at least, I don't know about everyone else, I do try to reflect and go, where were you wrong? And the conclusion that I came to is that where I was wrong was lumping the parishioners and the people of Salem Baptist Church with the actions of their pastor. That's not right. That being said, I do think that they should have some questions for their pastor on why he felt it was appropriate for him to be at the stadium proposal. That's also a question that I think Mayor Johnson, who has failed to answer, even though I've literally asked it to him myself. Maybe that's a whole nother episode of the podcast, like the interview with the mayor. But my issue, and it's still my issue, and if I had an opportunity to talk with Pastor Dates, and I imagine that I will get that opportunity at some point to talk with Pastor Dates through intermediaries or whatever, my issue is still that he was being used as a prop, and so was religion. And this is the very unfortunate part about, you know how people will often tell sports folks to stick to sports? I don't want to tell the pastor to do that. I imagine, because I don't know him, I imagine that his intention walking into this thing was good, and why not be able to speak in front of a bunch of people? The messaging is what's one of the things that's wrong for me, and the fact that he felt compelled to not say no. Like, you have to look at this as, is this a political play? I know that Kevin Warren presents as a man of faith, and there's nothing wrong with that. If that's the way that you want to lead to who you are, I'm good with it. But the confluence of that, while clearly using PR tactics that some might even call strong arm tactics, for political and financial gain, to me, is where a line is crossed. And I felt that Pastor Dates crossed the line. Had it been a simple invocation, had the pastor gone up there and said, you know, I pray for the city of Chicago, and I'm happy that we are all here, and safe for now. I'm okay with that. But to me, it crossed the line of him almost using religion and God to campaign for a proposal that we have no idea is going to help black and brown people, and definitely folks that live on the South Side, and a bunch of people who are followers of his at his church. What we do know from the history of public money being given to private enterprise is that it enriches the wealthy. The billionaire class, there, how many studies do I have to cite on this? They will offer this as jobs, jobs, jobs. And you heard the mayor talking about this. He wouldn't stop talking about the idea that this was really something about jobs. Well, even if it's in Arlington Heights, the jobs are going to be in Cook County. But they're also not full-time jobs. And the math is really fuzzy on this. And what the Bears offered up was fuzzy math. It's why I didn't like that the mayor was involved in this at all. And then you add in Pastor Dates, where you don't have to be there for that. I would have loved it. I love it if, like, let's say that the project goes through, that somehow the city and the state get on board with the Bears. They make this thing happen. In the moment when the shovels are in the ground, if the pastor is there to bless that and trying to look over the people that are working on the project, I'm so good with that. But this felt gross. This felt ungodly. And remember how I was telling you that my full name is Lawrence Wendell Matthew Holmes? So, the confirmation of my baptism, the confirmation when I was confirmed into the church, you get to choose a name. And so my choice was Matthew, because in studying the Gospel of Matthew, I found a lot of connection with Matthew being someone telling the story of Jesus and also offering gems. And as I sat there listening to Pastor Dates, I was enraged. And the reason that I was enraged was because of this. Matthew 6:24. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. That's Matthew 6:24. We can, if you want, because these are the things that people had assumed in coming at me, that I am not versed in the word. If you want, we can go to 1 Timothy if you want. We can also start talking about a bunch of different passages from Proverbs on this very subject. And so that's what kind of made me blow a gasket. Because it needs to be pointed out. The other part of it to me is so political. And the political aspect to me is there's a lot of power politically in the black church. The pastors are often surrogates for votes in the black community. I think that conservatives, capital C, have always done themselves a disservice by not being able, and I don't mean all conservatives, I mean some of the loudest conservatives, have done themselves a disservice by not understanding the power of the black church, because they can't get over our lingering racial history. They would find a lot of conservatives that believe in a lot of their stuff. If you look at voting patterns of Black Americans outside of issues that have to do specifically with the Black community, as a block, we are fairly conservative. If you look at the way that Black Americans vote on issues of the LGBTQ community, it's pretty conservative. And part of that stems from a relationship with the Black church. If you look at the voting history of Black Americans when it comes to immigration and immigration reform, it's pretty conservative. That comes from the Black church and also comes from the idea of, if there are more mouths to feed, if there are more people inside of the job market, how is the Black dollar ever going to expand and grow? These are all issues that I'd be willing to talk about and debate with anyone. Because I understand, even though I disagree, I understand where some of that stuff comes from. But it's the optic. It's the optic of having someone up there as a representative of a church to say, this is okay. To say that something secular is okay. It's giving the approval of something that is okay. And I don't like that. I don't like that. I don't think that it serves the people. I think that it could, in some ways, end up hurting the people, which is why I spoke out. This is a bigger issue, and this is one of the things that I've been talking with my friends about over the last few days. Is the other part is that people, even inside of this conversation, there will be people who get mad at me because how dare I say the pastor's name out loud? Who am I? I am a man, and so is he. The deification of our religious leaders is how a lot of problems start. It's how we allow there to be massive abuse inside of the Catholic Church, because the priest or the bishop or the cardinal, they are deified as if they are perfect. They are not. They are supposed to be vessels of God. They are not God. And I think I shouldn't speak from a place of ignorance. I don't know how white evangelical Christians or white Christians feel about their pastor. I do know a little bit how Black folks interact with their pastor. And the deification of the pastor is scary. And that's why there were people who were just kind of trying to defend Pastor Dates. And I get that. I mean, if you know him and that's your guy, and I know, like, people didn't have to, and they sent me, and I do appreciate that too. They sent me, well, look at all the good stuff that he's done. He's done a ton of good. And there's nothing wrong with saying that he's done a ton of good. My problem is that anyone who looks at that and should be able to point out that this wasn't good. That this strayed away from the message. That he allowed himself to be used as a political pawn. And I don't know if that was him being naive. And honestly, like, that's his friendly as I can be about it, because either he was naive or he was being dastardly. I'd like to think that he went in there with the best of intentions. And the people who asked him to be there, I don't think that they had the best of intentions. And that bothers me. It really scares me. Like, if you wanted to see what Chicago politics, like the stereotype of Chicago politics. It was on display Wednesday on the lakefront. That was big business. That was Democratic machine. That was using, like, and you'll see during the presidential election, it'll be an interesting, the Biden campaign, and I know now we're like, I should have done another warning here. The Biden campaign through surrogates is going to reach out to the black community again. And what they're going to tell the black community is, I'm the only thing standing in between you and tyranny. And what the black community is going to tell the Biden campaign and Biden surrogates is, you only come here every 4 years. Your surrogates and your people are not invested. They don't come to Salem Baptist Church when it's not an election year. And I know that that might seem cynical of me, but you know what? It has been what it's been for a long time. And that's, I guarantee you that you are going to see Joe Biden at a black church over the next few months. And I guarantee you that he's going to try and code switch. And he's going to be up there with the Reverend doing all sorts of stuff. And it's part of the reason that people end up not trusting politicians. Is because coming around only when you need something, when it's convenient for you, is not great. And that's what Wednesday felt like. Wednesday felt like the Bears and the mayor needed credibility. They needed the credibility of Pastor Dates to help sell their project. And that their project is worth the pastor's time. And I would say that it's not. And I have said that it's not. And that's why I was disappointed. That considering the grand history of how politicians treat the black community and the brown community too, that it's something that he should have seen coming. And despite both Kevin Warren and Brandon Johnson being black, he should have looked at it like, man, this feels like some outsider shit. This feels exactly like when people come to the neighborhoods and try to strip votes out of it. So as I conclude the first half of this, again, I want to say I am sorry to the members of Salem Baptist Church. I truly apologize for you catching astray. I look forward to your continued feedback, and I will tell you that one of the good things that's come out of this for me is it's allowed me to continue my study of the Bible. Some stuff went off in my brain, and I was able to get back into reading the Bible, which I think is good. I don't know what that means for me in faith. I still struggle with it. I struggle with the concept of church, not of faith and not of God, but of church. Because church can often be bastardized. And when I see that type of hypocrisy, I can't help myself from saying something. But in my attempt to say something that I feel very strongly about, I unintentionally hurt people who had nothing to do with it. And I apologize for that. Apologies should be apologies. You should say what you did wrong, and you should try to be better. So in that case, when I get my dander up about things, I'll try to do a better job of not making people that had nothing to do with why I'm angry catch strays. I want to talk about Mayor Johnson next.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
So, I had an opportunity to talk with the mayor. I wasn't sure if the mayor had seen my video. I know that now like close to a million people have seen it. And it's weird to end up in the New York Post and awful announcing. But I will say, I'm glad that I ended up in those places without stepping in it myself, you know, without completely embarrassing myself and maybe getting fired. I felt that I was fighting a righteous fight, and I stand by the fact that I was fighting a righteous fight. We had scheduled an interview with the mayor. And now we can talk a little bit more about the media side of this. We have been working on getting the mayor in. The mayor and I have a little bit of a relationship. He's been a fan of mine. I've been a fan of his. We had the opportunity to meet after he was elected. We have a lot of the same friends. I know a lot of people in CTU. I know people in CTU leadership. He is of that and from that. So he was willing to come in probably before he had heard of my criticism of what had happened on Wednesday and his involvement in it. I was sitting there trying to calm myself, first of all, knowing that I was going to talk with the mayor. And I kept thinking on the drive in, I want to be what I admire. I admire when people speak truth to power. I admire when people ask tough questions. And as much as I, during the campaign process, like Mayor Johnson, I'm not going to let him get away with what I think is abandoning some of the principles of his campaign. And I don't even mean that as a voter. I mean that as an observer and someone who takes the growth and the health of the city of Chicago fairly seriously. This happens a lot. I remember meeting Lori Lightfoot at the Silver Room block party before she got elected. And I remember her making a lot of promises. And I remember walking away being like, wow, that was a really good conversation. And I do think that there are things about Lori Lightfoot that are good. I do think that she had the city's best in mind. I just think that her style wasn't going to allow her to succeed. And I think she made a lot of miscalculations on a ton of stuff. With Brandon Johnson, the issue might be that while he was an intriguing candidate, that he's probably not ready to be mayor of Chicago. That the job might be too big for him. What concerned me, and if you didn't check out the interview, you should, whether you're a Bears fan or someone who's a citizen of the city of Chicago, the county of Cook, or the state of Illinois. What concerns me is there seems to be a discrepancy in the power dynamic. If you didn't know any better, you would have thought in listening to that interview and listening to Brandon Johnson's remarks at the proposal that Kevin Warren was the mayor and not him. It really struck me how Kevin Warren has done a very effective job of lobbying. And to be fair, that's his job. His job is to do whatever is necessary to put the Bears in an advantageous situation. He can say all of the pretty stuff about how he wants it to be collaborative and that he wants to help beautify the city and downtown is really important to him. He can say all of that. But what's good for the Bears isn't necessarily good for the city. And he's paid to represent the what's good for the Bears. Never forget that. Now, the mayor was elected to represent what's good for Chicago. And it feels like he has gotten that mixed up. And it was disappointing to hear him stick to talking points and not understand, or at least publicly understand, that what he's asking for is diametrically opposed to the platform that he ran on. And here's what I mean. Brandon Johnson is so far left that when he was campaigning, even his members of his party were talking about him being like the kind of whispering, well, you know, he's a socialist, right? Yeah, Johnson guy's kind of a socialist. He needs to be more of a centrist. And he has definitely moved himself back to the middle. Some would say that that happens to every politician, right or left, that once you are in charge of the entire city, state, ward, whatever, that you move towards the middle because that's where most of the people are. I would say that in the case of Brandon Johnson, no one was asking him to move towards the middle. The idea that he got elected was based primarily on his proximity to the left and what people thought that meant in terms of reform. Reform is hard, and you do have to make some compromises. What I don't like about it is this doesn't feel like a compromise. And I thought the mayor got some bad advice. I don't think that he needed to be there at the proposal. I thought a statement from him, even if it's a statement of support, which I disagree with, but I would have understood. I would have understood him sending out an email saying, yes, we are looking forward to having further conversations with the Chicago Bears and their proposal of building a new facility on the lakefront. There are still many hurdles that anyone building on the lakefront is going to have to jump over, but we are open to the idea, especially if they are willing to spend their own money and lessen the burden on the public. I would be totally fine if that's what his statement said. And that was off the top of the dome, and it was pretty good. If you gave me 20 minutes, I could write you out one that would have been better and that he should have used. I don't know if he has anyone out there that's looking out for him and his candidacy. And judging by how the first year of his administration is going, it's hard to argue the opposite. I also think that from an optic standpoint, and maybe my next job is being someone's press secretary or advisor, the city is in need of a lot of things. We're a great city and we're strong, but we still need a lot of stuff. And considering that a police officer was murdered last week, the idea of Mayor Johnson kind of being up there dancing like it's the 1995 Source Awards with Kevin Warren and all of this bombast that was going on, I struggle on to why he thought that was a good idea. And I hope someone was like, Mr. Mayor, this is maybe not time nor place for this. But he didn't get the message, or he got the message that he wanted. And the message that he wanted was the Bears have promised him job. He kept coming back to you inside of our interview. And again, if you haven't seen the interview, go look at it. It's on NBC Sports Chicago's YouTube page. He kept coming back to, this is a win-win-win. And this, it's going to be 24,000 jobs for the public. And they've put skin in the game. And then you start to do the actual math. While the Bears are out here trying to sell you that this is a $4.6 billion project, the truth is that it's closer to $7 billion. The Bears are trying to have their cake and eat it too. They want the city to help finance a building that the city will own, but they want all the revenue from non-football stuff, according to multiple reports. So a Beyonce concert happens, they want the revenue from that. The Prep Bowl, which the mayor kept talking about, that happens. The Bears want that. They want to be able to sell the naming rights of whatever this place is going to be, even though it is a publicly or semi-publicly funded stadium that resides on the grounds of the city of Chicago. The Bears don't own that land. The city does. I also thought that there was I thought that Mayor Johnson, he felt like a, like when I was talking to him and when I heard him inside of the proposal, it felt like a political, a Chicago political Mad Lib. Like he was just kind of throwing stuff out there and seeing what would stick. Like, oh, well, Daniel Burnham, Harold Washington. And he's trying to make these things match. And I don't think they match. From my understanding of Burnham's plan, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but it wasn't to turn the lakefront into a way for a private entity to wash money. The idea of parks and parkland isn't so that there can be a great cathedral that is built for the Bears that's available. And another thing, both the Bears and the mayor tried to tell you how great this was going to be for kids. Fam, that place is not going to be available for folks to just roam in that place, just like Soldier Field, is it? Oh, well, this will bring kids to the lakefront. Look, as I said, this is a fairly personal episode of the podcast today. You're learning a lot about me. Here's another thing that you'll know about me. I grew up far south, not far from Salem Baptist Church. I didn't see the lake until I was 13. I think we went to Rainbow Beach when I was in seventh grade or eighth grade, and that was the first time that I saw the lake. We didn't go to the lake. That's not a thing that we did. And that's, I'm a far south kid, and to be honest, from where we lived, the lake was about 4 miles away, and we never went. That story is not unique to me. There are a lot of children in Chicago that have never been to the lake. And then they're like, oh man, this is pretty awesome. Yeah, getting kids down to the lakefront is really important. A stadium is not going to bring them down to the lakefront. And the way that people react in this city when any young people try to go downtown would make me not want to go down to the lakefront. Folks freak out. These kids, what are they doing downtown? Where are their parents? I thought that you said that you wanted us at the lakefront. Well, we're here now. Now what? So anyway, it has been, I'm very happy that the governor has been the adult in the room. And I'm not naive. I understand that the governor has his eyes on bigger political gain, that he is establishing his national platform of being a guy that doesn't want to give public money to private enterprise. By the way, I agree with him on that. And there is countless study on why it never ends up working out for the municipality. You mean to tell me that the folks in Kansas City, that the folks in Missouri said to their three-time Super Bowl winning quarterback, tight end, coach, whoever else the Chiefs trotted out there to try to get public money for private enterprise, those people said no. You mean to tell me the folks that have been watching the Bears fumble things, including their own stadium idea, that we should give them the money? And speaking of Arlington Heights, the mayor of Arlington Heights is funny to me because I think that he's got the right approach to this, where he's like, yeah, you know, we're good being in the fallback position if this thing doesn't work on the lakefront. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Because he knows the likelihood of it passing through the state assembly and being signed, this particular plan that they have in front of the governor, if they give this to the governor, it's going to be sent back with a laughing emoji. And then the Bears can be like, oh yeah, there's that place where we spent $200 million to buy the land. An underreported story, as far as I'm concerned, is finding out if the McCaskies are billionaires on paper or not. They're worth billions of dollars, but do they have billions of dollars? Because I think that's part of the reason that you're seeing this happen. Now, look, there are most of the stadiums that are built in the NFL are not owned by the team. It's a better economic model if you can find a municipality that's going to help you pay for it and then allow you to dictate some of the terms of the money that's generated inside of it. That's what the Bears are trying to do. But I do think it's worth digging into. And that's hard because we're talking about personal finances here. But the way that the ownership is structured and the ownership shares are structured with the Bears, it's a legitimate question to ask if they have the capital and liquidity to make this thing work on their own. And it's going to be fascinating to find out how all of this stuff plays out. I know I've already gone too long, and I've told you that I'm going to try to stop doing long episodes, but I felt like this episode needed to be longer. Fair enough. Don't worry. There's going to be more actual football stuff on House of L. Because on the football side, the football operations of the Bears is very strong right now. And that should be celebrated. Real talk. Thanks for giving me the grace and the room to talk about some of these subjects. I appreciate your time. I'll talk to you soon. Peace.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.